Today's reading is from 2 Corinthians. But if I wish to boast, I will not be a fool, for I will be speaking the truth. But I refrain from it, so that no one may think better of me than what is seen in me or heard from me, even considering the exceptional character of the revelations. Therefore, to keep me from being too elated, a thorn was given me in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from being too elated. 3 times I appealed to the Lord about this, that it would leave me. But he said to me, "My grace is sufficient for you, for power is made perfect in weakness. So I will boast all the more gladly of my weaknesses, so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am content with weaknesses, insults, hardships, persecutions, and calamities for the sake of Christ. For whenever I'm weak, then I am strong." The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
Well, good morning, St. Luke's. I'm excited to be with you this morning. I want to start by telling you about one of my favorite ways to waste my time, and that is Instagram. Does anyone relate to me at all in this room? Great. So I joined Instagram in October of 2012, and back then it was a pretty new social media platform. I think I said when I was signing up my account something to the effect of, "Why would anyone use Instagram when we have Facebook?" So clearly, I'm cutting edge and early adopter, as you can see. But I had a friend that was a little more cutting edge than me that said, "No, you've got to get on this, and you can post pictures of, you know, pretty much everything that you're doing." And so back in 2012, this was before we had kids, and I was clogging up everyone's feed with pictures of them. So back then, it was mostly pictures of my cats, coffee, food. You can actually see my very first Instagram post up here. It's a little hard to read the caption. This is just evidence that the internet never forgets also. And so the caption of this photo says June, which that's my cat. June is my BFF. That's precious. And so the caption, the filter, the cat, all of it. I may not have been an early adopter, but I got on the Instagram train pretty quickly and it took off. And so, you know, Instagram is great. We have friends that are kind of spread out all over the country, and it's nice to be able to keep in touch with them. But there's this weird thing about the world of the internet, right? That it lets people project an image of their lives that may or may not be true, that are carefully filtered to project what we want people to see. And there's a picture that I'm going to put up now of a woman doing yoga. See, she's got some help from her friend. It's really nice. But unfortunately, if you look carefully, you can see the friend didn't quite make the frame because that wasn't the image that she wanted to portray. Now, whether or not we're putting forth a fake image of yoga poses that we can or cannot do, putting filters of pictures with our cats, there's another interesting layer to this community of Instagram that has really been drawing my attention, and it's these people known as influencers. Now, influencers are people that are living everyday lives, they're just regular people, but with the right product placement and the right filters, they tend to get paid money to do so. And these influencers, many of them women, many of them moms, they post these perfectly filtered photos of them and their pets or their families doing just everyday things. Sometimes they showcase the ordinary, right? Like taking a walk around the neighborhood. Sometimes they showcase what I think is the supernatural, when they put toddlers on white couches in a room with white walls, people are coloring and smiling and everything remains white. It's amazing to me. But beyond this, one thing that I've noticed that started happening on some of these so-called influencer accounts that I follow is that some of these accounts are starting to go dark. In fact, one account that I follow posted the other day that the pressure of trying to put forth an image of a perfectly curated life day after day was too much. And it was stressing her family out. It was taking the joy away from them. So she was done. And whether or not you use social media, whether or not you knew what an Instagram influencer was or even care what an Instagram influencer is, the point is for any of us, it's hard to keep up a facade, right? It's hard to constantly present the image of having everything together. And even though it can be exhausting, even though it sometimes isn't genuine, so many of us spend our time and energy trying to do just that. Whether it's in the photos that we post on the internet, whether it's the conversation that we have around the dinner table, or those things about us that we just don't talk about. The temptation is to put our best selves forward at all times and to keep those less appealing parts of ourselves hidden and out of view. And so I think that this text today that we just heard presents a challenge to us. It's a challenge to keep it real, a challenge for God's grace to be enough for who we actually are. It's a challenge to even boast about our weaknesses and put them on display. And depending on where you are in your life, in your story, this passage might land differently for some of us. Some of you find this declaration of Paul about God's grace to be inspiring and freeing. But some of you might find this to be a little unrealistic and maybe even kind of threatening. But no matter how these words of Paul land with you, here's how I want to make sure to frame it for us. Paul's not writing these words in a vacuum. That's important for us to know. These just aren't inspirational musings that Paul put out there so we could put them on a bumper sticker or a coffee mug or the back of our favorite Christian t-shirt. This passage and these famous words, they don't just stand alone. We need to remember that Paul's writings, including this one today, these were actual letters to real groups of people that he was invested in. These are words to actual churches that were just trying to figure out how to live their lives and be faithful to the things that God had called them to. These were actual messy people who Paul was navigating life with. And so this letter in particular is to the church at Corinth. This is the second letter we have from Paul to this church, and his relationship with them, it can be a little complicated, kind of like a roller coaster. At the point that he's writing, things are actually at an all-time low between Paul and this church in Corinth. He's invested in this church. He's put so much into them to make sure that they can grow and be healthy. But, you know, people are people, right? And now there's this relational conflict between them. And even more than this relational conflict, there's a group from the outside that's come in, and they've said, Paul, kind of step aside. We're going to question his authority. We want to take his place. And so Paul comes up into this letter, and he's pretty fired up, as you can imagine you would be too, right? You could say maybe in the chapter before this verse that we read today that Paul is maybe rather aggressively putting forth the best curated filter of himself. He basically says, look, you all want to talk about all the good things that you've done for God. Well, sit down. It's time to talk about me. And it's like that old song that you might know, anything you can do, I can do better. You know that one? Paul says, oh, you're a Hebrew? Yeah, me too. You've done good things for Jesus? That's a good story. You worked hard for the gospel? Well, let me tell you about that time I was shipwrecked and had to survive at sea. What about that one where they stoned me? Remember that? And by the way, when I'm not stranded at sea or thrown into prison because of my faith, you know what? I'm majorly stressed out because I'm trying to keep all you churches in line to do your work. I'm just saying. And so this over-the-top kind of rambling defense from Paul that we read before this text today, it feels like a lot when you read through it. I feel like Paul's trying way too hard to prove how great he is. And listening to it all, reading through it, it feels a little bit abrasive, maybe disingenuous. But the truth is, I get where he's coming from. And you might too, because especially when things are hard, when we feel like we have something to prove, or we feel like those parts of us that we try to keep hidden are about to get exposed, what do? We go into defense mode, right? We start hustling, we try to prove ourselves, we try to put our best face forward and show that we have it all under control, whether that's true or not. The thing about Paul is that Paul really is an impressive person. If you know anything about Paul, whether or not this retelling of all of those awesome things that he's done for God, whether he exaggerates it or not, he was a pretty outstanding guy. He spent his whole post-conversion life working toward nurturing and growing the church. He was busy doing amazing, incredible things in the name of Jesus. But as incredible as these things are, they don't tell the whole story about Paul. Because to tell the whole story, we have to make a shift into those verses that we just heard read today. We can't stay in Paul's enthusiastic listings of his resume. No, the story changes. And we move from Paul frantically putting his best self on display to Paul exhaling and keeping it real. Where Paul initially works really hard to defend himself and make himself look good, here the tone begins to change. Because it's one thing for someone like Paul to list all the highlights from his life, right? But it's a whole thing different to say that there are hard things going on in my life, things that won't let up, and that's what I actually want you to pay attention to. Because that's where God's grace is working. That's the thing worth bragging about above all the other stuff I just told you about. And without God's grace, there's no way I could make it through this life on my own. Because at the end of the day, even though these are Paul's letters, and even though Paul probably has every right to highlight all these things about him that are really and truly remarkable, this isn't just a story about Paul. This is a story about God, and this is a story with grace at its very core. This is a grace that's bigger than anything we can or cannot do, bigger than the circumstances that we find ourselves in. Grace has the power to meet us in our weaknesses, just like it met Paul, and keep us going. And God meets Paul in his weaknesses, in this thorn in the flesh that Paul tells us about, this thing that's tormenting him. And you know what is so hard for me about this thorn? Is that this story about the thorn does not end the way that I want it to. This story about the thorn doesn't end with holy, remarkable Paul praying the right words and God saying, you know what, Paul? You've done a really good job, so I'm going to take that hard thing away. No, Paul is so clear. He says, I prayed and I prayed and I begged God to take this hard thing away. And God said, no, I'm not going to remove the thorn, but I'm going to ask you to keep going, to keep trusting in my grace, because my grace will get you through it. And this is God's promise to Paul, and it's God's promise to us. And in many ways, this is a promise that I approach with a lot of caution. And it's hard for me to embrace. Because this kind of grace doesn't make a lot of sense. This grace tells us that we don't have to remove all the messiness from our lives to keep moving forward. It's counterintuitive. Because even when those obstacles won't budge, and as limiting as that feels to us, God won't be contained by it. Paul tells us that this thing that's tormenting him, it's not going to get better, but God's grace is going to get him through it. That hard thing might not be removed, but the hard thing can be redeemed. And even when we think that who we are is too broken and there's too much in the way, God reminds us that God is never limited by our wounds and our weaknesses. God can use Paul, God can use you and me with all of our best and all of our worst. The thorn might not go away, but it doesn't have to stand in the way of what God can do. And here's what I don't want us to miss about this whole story about Paul. Paul gets real about this thorn to experience God's sustaining grace. And it's only when we stop ignoring our own thorns that this process of redemption can begin in our lives. We only see how grace can get us through it and transform us when we get real about our own stuff. For God's grace to be sufficient, for God's power to be perfect in our weakness, do you know what we need? We need places of weakness. We need to assume that there's areas of our lives that qualify as difficult or weak. And for us to live into what the scripture's all about, we have to move beyond having it all together all the time. We have to be honest about our flaws. We have to be open about our baggage. We have to tell the truth about who we are. We have to be willing to go beyond showcasing our best stuff because it makes us look great or it makes us comfortable. Because a story that's only constructed around the goodness of us, what we've done, doesn't have a lot of room for God's goodness to break through. And this goodness, this grace of God, it meets us in places where we have failed. It meets us in the places where life has failed us, when we haven't been able to hold it all together despite our best efforts. It meets us when we feel like we can't get back to where we need to be on our own, when we feel like we're at the end of our rope. It meets us in those places that are too hard to acknowledge. But if we're real, that every single one of us has. In one of my favorite books, Accidental Saints by Nadia Bolz-Weber, she tackles this issue of receiving grace when we don't want it. She describes grace as being the best, worst feeling. She says, "I don't want to need grace. Preferably, I could do it all and be it all and never mess it up. That may be what I prefer, but that's never what I really need. I need to be broken apart and put back into a different shape by that merging of things human and divine, which is really screwing up and receiving grace and love and forgiveness rather than receiving what I really deserve. I need the very thing that I will do everything I can to avoid needing." I think if we're honest, grace is a really nice thing to talk about and an incredibly difficult thing to experience. Because receiving grace means getting real about the parts of us that actually need it. And friends, that can be risky, vulnerable, even dangerous work. It means trusting that God is able to move through us and with us no matter what we might bring to the table. It's trusting that we don't have to simply present our best selves to God or each other, but that God pours out grace even and especially when we are at our very worst. This isn't something that started with Paul. It's not something that's new to us. God has a long history of grace meeting people where they are and doing something incredible despite their weaknesses. Think about our whole story of faith. Think about Moses. Moses had a bad temper. He straight up did not want to be a leader, and God used him to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. Joseph was sold into slavery, betrayed by his very own family. And years later had the chance to forgive them and offer radical grace. Ruth was a poor widow from the wrong country, from the wrong religious background, without a chance in a foreign land. And instead of her story ending with grief and devastation, God gave her a new life in a new land with a new future. David had some messy family drama, to put it mildly, and God used him, messy drama and all, to lead a great nation. And Jesus, God with us on earth, Jesus experienced a humiliating criminal's death on the cross, and God's power overcame that symbol of public humiliation and execution and turned it into the core of what we know grace to be. See, grace weaving its way into the hardest, darkest, most shameful parts of our story. Friends, that is how God works. That's who God is. It's what God does. God did it in those stories. God's done it in your story, and God has done it in mine too. And as uncomfortable as it is, as much as we often don't want to, when we let our stories out into the world, when we can do that hard work, God can use them in some really remarkable and redemptive ways. Some of you in here know my story because I got to share it with you in a video during our Pentecost Sunday. But if you don't know it, or maybe you've slept since then, I would understand. The short version of my story is that after losing my mom to cancer when I was 2, 7 years later, my dad remarried a woman who was incredibly emotionally abusive. I lived with them for 5 years, and those years were punctuated with isolation, with fear, with the persistent message that the family, the world would just be better if I didn't exist. You know, these people that were supposed to take care of me, they were unintentionally negligent at best and purposefully damaging at their worst. My stepmom did everything she could to pretend that I didn't exist, including moving my bedroom to the basement and not letting me go in other areas of the house when she was home. The isolation was so extreme that I missed so many days of school my freshman year of high school, I was one absence away from getting expelled for truancy. And the thing is, from the outside, this family that I lived in, we looked really good. We went to church. My parents both served there in leadership. We were this model of a perfect blended family. But on the inside, every single thing was broken. And as these situations go over time, I began to shoulder the responsibility of this, to think, maybe if I was a better kid, maybe if I did something differently, maybe then these people that are supposed to be taking care of me, maybe then they will love me. And you know, and I know now, that not a single thing that happened to me in that house was my fault. But here's what I'll tell you. The shame that manifested itself during those years of abuse, that is a shame that hovers over my shoulder even today. And here's what surprised me about doing that interview for the Pentecost sermon series. I didn't expect to find that shame, but it found me. I didn't expect to feel embarrassment, the urge to gloss over the hardest parts of my stories, the urge to want to sanitize the details, to make my dad and his wife not look so bad, to make myself not look like such a victim, not feel so weak in front of 2,000 of my closest friends. But I did. I felt that. I wanted to have overcome the whole thing myself. I wanted it to be on my strength that that situation got better. I want to not have a weak and hard and sad part of my story. But that would not be true. And it's true that this particular chapter of my story, if you saw that video, it has an incredibly redemptive ending. I moved in with my grandparents when I was 15. I went to college and seminary. I married an incredible man, had two amazing kids. There is so much goodness that I can sit in this current season of my life. But if I'm real with you this morning, I'll admit I'd rather tell you all about that good stuff that's going on now and pretend that that bad, hard stuff never happened. That version of my story is easier to tell. And oftentimes, I default to when someone asks me about my parents, giving a really generic, untrue answer. But friends, that is not the whole truth of my story. And when I gloss over the things about it that have been really hard, where God has gotten me through, I miss that, right? I miss where God's grace has sustained me time and time again. And I miss how God has used my pain and my story to show God's grace to others. When I was in college, and if I was home over the summer, I'd always volunteer with the youth group that I attended in town. And every summer, we'd take a group of students to Christen Youth Camp, CIY Camp. It is a week of madness that happens on a college campus. There's loud music, big speakers, tons of fun. But my favorite part about that week was always our D groups, our discipleship groups. It was small groups of 10 to 12 students where we'd get together, we'd pray, we'd do devotions, we'd process what the speaker was talking about. And there was one night, I don't remember what the speaker said, but I do remember that I was compelled to share my story with the small group that I was leading. And as I was sharing the story, I noticed there was one girl in the circle whose countenance started to change. Now, she had been the life of the party all week with my group. She was loud, she was funny, she was a little wild and hard to rein in during small group time. She was kind of annoying at moments. But I knew that something was going on with her because that bright, shiny facade, it was starting to fade. And as I finished telling my story, I looked across the circle at her, and tears were running down her face. And she looked me in the eye, and she said words that I will never forget. She said, "My mom has been hitting me for the past 5 years, and I never knew that I could tell someone until this moment." I never saw a purpose in my story until that night. Because until that moment, that part of my story was just a wound that I wanted to erase. It was too difficult, it was too messy to let out into the world. But here's what that night showed me. When we get real about our stories, when we're willing to be vulnerable enough to take down the filter and show how things really are, God will meet us there. Grace will fill in the gaps of where we don't think we measure up. Grace will tell us the truth about ourselves when the world has told us a lie. Grace will take the things that we think are simply too broken, things that we think that could not possibly be salvaged, and grace will use those things to do something bigger and better than we ever imagined. And as we let grace into the broken parts of our lives and we become transformed, that's when we can in turn begin to transform the world. God's grace is sufficient for us. This is more than a well-known Bible verse. This is the truth about who this God that we worship is. This is an invitation to trust and follow and bring our whole selves to the table. It's a promise that we can be real with God and real with each other, and that God will always keep showing up. And it's a reminder that there's nothing about our lives, our stories, ourselves, that God is not able to redeem. And if we can believe that truth, if we can sit in that, if we can live into that hope, and if we can bring every part of ourselves to God, then we will know that we don't have to do this alone. We'll know that no matter how hard things get, no matter how far we fall, no matter what seems to stand in the way, God will be faithful, and God's grace will be sufficient for us. Amen.